But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. You're listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We're going to start off this show with the latest in controlling women's bodies. Move on to the story of how NBC News fucked around and found out. And follow all of that up with an update to our ongoing docuseries, How Many Bibles Does It Take to Keep Trump Out of Jail? Let's begin, shall we? Since the supreme disappointment overturned Roe v. Wade, there has been a blatantly obvious and concerted effort by Republicans to roll women's rights all the way back to the early 1900s, when women were still property and subject to the patriarchy for basic needs like shelter, food, and security. So it may come as no surprise that their latest misogynistic move toward dominance came in the form of a lawsuit by several embarrassments to the medical profession who demanded that they needed to be protected from the ludicrous scenarios they concocted in their feeble minds regarding the drug mifepristone.
The Supreme Court just finished hearing arguments in a monumental case threatening access to medication abortion in the U.S., even in states where abortion remains legal.
Now, the high court today hearing arguments centered on mifepristone, one of the two drugs widely used to terminate early pregnancies. It's also utilized to expel remaining fetal tissue after a miscarriage.
A group of anti-abortion doctors argue the FDA wrongly expanded access to the pill in 2016 when it extended the window women can take it from 7 to 10 weeks. And during the pandemic in 2021, said an in-person doctor's visit was not needed, allowing mail-order pharmacies to ship the drug nationwide.
It appears a majority of justices are skeptical that this conservative group has standing or the right to bring this lawsuit. Now, this conservative group argues that, you know, the medical professionals within it could at some point be called upon to issue medical treatment to someone who has had complications from using mifepristone. And they say they object to that, and that's what gives them standing.
Now, you might be asking yourself, what in the D-average doctors is going on with mifepristone? And you'd be correct in questioning the motives of physicians who want to make sure no one in America can have access to mifepristone just because they might have to deal with a patient who is suffering from complications from taking the drug. Because that's fucking stupid. But let's not forget, the bogus SCOTUS ruled last year that it's not discrimination if web designers refuse to make a website for a same-sex couple, even when that web designer was not asked by a same-sex couple to make a website. Because it's just the notion that they may be asked by a same-sex couple in some completely made-up future that Christian bigots like Lori Smith from Colorado need the Supreme Intelligence to protect them from. Which is why the justice with her head on straight, Ketanji Jackson, brought up this you-didn't-think-this-all-the-way-through point to the anti-abortion doctor's lawyer, who happens to be the wife of Congressman Josh Hawley.
Counsel, can I ask you about the remedy and sort of the way that I was talking with the SG? I mean, it makes perfect sense for the individual doctors to seek an exemption. But as I understand it, they already have that. And so what they're asking for here is that in order to prevent them from possibly ever having to do these kinds of procedures, everyone else should be prevented from getting access to this medication. So why isn't that plainly overbroad scope of the remedy the end of this case?
These are emergency situations. Respondent doctors don't necessarily know until they scrub into that operating room whether this may or may not be abortion drug harm. Because these are emergency situations, they can't waste precious moments scrubbing in.
I'm saying assuming we have a world in which they can actually lodge the objections that you say that they have. My question is, isn't that enough to remedy their issue? Do we have to also entertain your argument that no one else in the world can have this drug, or no one else in America should have this drug in order to protect your clients?
So again, Your Honor, it's not possible given the emergency nature of these situations.
Counsel, and this case seems like a prime example of turning what could be a small lawsuit into a nationwide legislative assembly on an FDA rule or any other federal government action.
I'm sorry, Ms. Jackson, but you make an excellent point. These doctors with an undiagnosed psychological aversion to mifepristone already have the ability to deny working on a patient for any reason other than, of course, age, sex, race, sexual orientation, religious affiliation, or national origin. And the last time I checked, mifepristone is not on the list of reasons why a doctor can refuse treatment. So what the fuck is their problem other than making a problem where there isn't one? Could it be the FDA? Because according to Supreme Justice Alito, it's the FDA.
Could you provide a more specific answer to the first question that Justice Thomas asked you? Is there anybody who could challenge in court the lawfulness of what the FDA did here?
In this particular case, I think the answer is no.
The statement was made that no court has ever previously second-guessed the FDA's judgment about access to a drug, right? And it's never second-guessed that.
That's correct.
Do you think the FDA is infallible?
No, Your Honor. We don't think that at all. And we don't think that question is really teed up in any way in this case.
Well, that tracks. Leave it to a Jesus freaking white man to question the efficacy of the FDA when it comes to the approval of a drug that is abortion adjacent. Because it's not like the FDA got it wrong when they approved whatever drugs that 73-year-old douche is currently taking because he's old as fuck. But when it comes to mifepristone, can we even trust the FDA? Obviously, Alito forgot to take his cognitive decline meds that morning, because how else can you explain that utter bullshit we heard dribbling out of his 73-year-old mouth? No, the FDA is not infallible. But at least their board is made up of current and former medical professionals and not a bunch of former lawyers whose medical training stops and starts with the instructions on the back of the box. Or as the woman who gets the underlying message because she's a really smart person, Rachel Maddow, so eloquently explained.
There's the technical arguments here, and there's, you know, the FDA drug approval process, and having the option of getting a medication abortion. It's not appropriate for everybody and in every circumstance, but it is for a lot of abortions, actually now for a majority of abortions. And what they're trying to do is take it away. They want a nationwide ban. The science and the reasoning in these lower court arguments that they're considering is so out there and so beyond the pale. It is a little bit frightening that the Supreme Court is even hearing this at all.
And that right there is what should keep you up at night if you happen to have a vagina and live in the United States. Because like Rachel Maddow just pointed out, the bogus SCOTUS even hearing a case where a small group of doctors want all access to a drug barred simply because they're scared of a scenario they've never been in is crazy town. But when you remember this group of jesters gave all web developers the right to discriminate against same-sex couples just because of the twisted machinations of one bigot from Colorado, it makes perfect sense, at least to me, that now a group of Christian bigots would pull the same stunt if it worked so well the first time. Only now it's mifepristone instead of a website. Which makes me really fucking nervous, folks, about the next non-based-in-reality Christian trauma they'll be blaming for wanting to bar the next thing that offends their march toward patriarchy. And while we wait with anxious paranoia for the next women's rights to be threatened, let's move on to a topic that we can all agree on. And that is, there is a lot of shit-talking we could do about American journalists and the media companies they work for. But if what happened at NBC News over the course of a week is any indicator, it appears ethical journalism isn't dead after all. I'm talking about the hiring and immediate firing of former RNC chairperson Ronna, don't call me Romney, McDaniel. And when I say don't call me Romney, I am referring to the fact that Ronna is the daughter of Republican Senator from Utah and member of the Maggots Don't Like This Guy Club, Mitt Romney. Anywho, NBC News made the bonehead decision to hire Ronna after she was fired from the RNC for the sake of being fair and balanced in their reporting. Oh, and her connections in the RNC, but mostly for the appearance of being fair and balanced. Unfortunately for NBC News, journalists employed by the company decided to use their time on the network to drag their bosses for discrediting their profession by hiring the Ronna, and for good reason.
She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for it.
Timing that she is only here after she got ousted from Trump's RNC. She habitually lied, joined Trump in attacking the press, members of the press, including this network, in a way that put journalists at risk.
Person who used her position of power to be an anti-democracy election denier.
She not only presided, but directed, drove the QAnonization of the Republican Party during her tenure.
Ms. McDaniel's role in Donald Trump's fake elector scheme and her pressuring of election officials to not certify election results.
She was saying, we'll get you lawyers.
She really did, folks. On a recorded call to Michigan officials, then head of the RNC, Ronna, and Mayor McTreason tried to get those officials to not sign the vote certification from their state for 2020. Ronna herself then said in writing, those who refused to certify the vote count in the 2020 election would get attorneys provided to them by the RNC. She not only spread that lie, but her dear leader winning the 2020 election, yeah, she was all for that one too. She also offered aid and comfort to those who perpetrated it. But hey, don't take my word for it. Here is MSNBC news host Rachel Maddow to explain.
And she pitched in and helped. She helped set in motion the part of the plot that involved sending fake Trump electors to Congress from states that Trump did not win. So Republicans in Washington could use those fake fraudulent elector slates to contend that maybe Trump did win those states, even though he didn't. She told the state of Michigan in writing explicitly, do not certify the election results. She told them, quote, do not sign it. We will get you lawyers. To use the party's power to reject election results, to take over the government and hold power by other means. And so I want to associate myself with all my colleagues, both at MSNBC and at NBC News, who have voiced loud and principled objections to our company putting on the payroll someone who hasn't just attacked us as journalists, but someone who is part of an ongoing project to get rid of our system of government. Someone who still is trying to convince Americans that this election stuff, it doesn't really work. That this last election, it wasn't a real result. That American elections are fraudulent.
And that's the kind of person that you want on your network. NBC News, who the fuck does something like that? Seriously, who at your organization thought it would be a great idea to give a platform and a paycheck to a harbinger of election lies just for the sake of accessing more maggot bullshit? It sounds to me like that person should be fired as well. Oh, wait. NBC News did fire the person who hired the Ronna, so there's that. And while we're on the subject of the intentions used to pave the road to fake journalism, it's crystal clear when NBC News came calling on the then out of work and former RNC chair Ronna, she started singing a different tune. Like the bullshit she said in her most recent interview with Meet the Press.
On November 17th, you and Donald Trump were recorded pushing two Republican election officials not to certify the results of the election. And on the call, you're recorded as saying, quote, if you can go home tonight, do not sign it. We will get you attorneys.
Our call that night was to say, are you okay? That's my recollection. It was 3.5 years ago. The reality is Joe Biden won. He's the president. He's the legitimate president. happening.
Let me just stop you because you did say, you just said Joe Biden's a legitimately elected president. This is the first time you have said this. And the RNC helped the Trump campaign assemble fake electors in Michigan, provide a platform for Trump lawyers to hold that news conference with Rudy Giuliani alleging a global conspiracy to rig the election against Trump. And you yourself called the election rigged multiple times. Did you enable Donald Trump to spread election lies?
Let's go back to time.
Let's go back to time. What time? That time you offered cover to state officials refusing to certify the 2020 vote count? Or how about the time you spent years telling anyone who would listen that the 2020 election was not legitimate and the Big Lebowski actually won? Honestly, I don't think there is enough time we could go back to where you wouldn't look like a thirsty for dictators fangirl, especially after you dropped your maiden name publicly because it offended Jabba the Gut. But since we're discussing time, can you explain this crap that came out of your maggot hole the last time you were on Meet the Press?
Donald Trump says one of his first acts, if he is reelected to a second term, would be, quote, to free those charged and convicted of crimes related to January 6th. Do you support that?
I do not think people who committed violent acts on January 6th should be freed. I don't think he wanted the attack on the Capitol, and so I don't hold him responsible for that.
Do you not have a responsibility as the RNC chair to say, before January 6th, the election is not rigged?
When you're the RNC chair, you kind of take one for the whole team, right? Now I get to be a little bit more myself.
Oh, she really is the worst. The Rona is either dumber than a fifth grader or DeLulu for being in the Republican Party for as long as she has been. But it sounds to me like she just admitted to saying whatever the person writing her paycheck currently wants her to say, which leads me to my next question. What in the two-faced bullshit does Rona think she's accomplishing by continuing to speak in public? Too bad that question won't be answered any time soon.
This just into CNN, NBC News has ousted former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel just days after hiring her as a paid political analyst.
The announcement coming after a loud chorus from NBC hosts, various talent, blasting that hire.
And after hosts spent days demanding she get the axe, now those hosts are celebrating.
I just have to say, when somebody does the right thing, I feel like it should be acknowledged as publicly as we acknowledged our outrage. And so I know how I feel about it. I am grateful to Caesar for actually making the right decision. I think it was the right decision.
It always feels wrong to talk about things, you know, in the company.
Agreed.
As if it's news.
I'm grateful that our leadership was willing to do the bold, strong, resilient thing.
I really appreciate working at a place that was able to say, we got this one wrong, and then made the right decision.
Our company listened to us, to you, and did what was right.
Because in a world where the media companies who control the news don't seem to be worried about how that makes them look, this is a bold move. Of course, it's the right thing to do, but it's still a bold move. And speaking of bold moves, did you hear the one about a New York State appeals court who just made a decision that only benefits a broke-ass billionaire?
Some breaking news to report out of New York. This is where a state appeals court judge has just granted Trump's request to stay the $464 million judgment in his New York civil fraud case.
This New York appeals court has reduced the amount that Trump would need to put up from $464 million down to $175 million, and they've given him now a week plus 10 more days to give that money over to the state.
Now, there was a concern today that if he wasn't able to do this, that the attorney general, Letitia James, she could move to start seizing his assets. The appeals court has just said not only does he not have to pay the full amount, yeah, he only has to pay $175 million. They've been trying, I believe, for $100 million, but he also has 10 more days to come up with that $175 million in this case.
There was a statement also from Alina Haba that just came out, the former president's attorneys. We are extremely pleased with the ruling issued by the appellate division. This monumental holding reigns in Judge Engoron's verdict, which is an affront to all Americans. She goes on, this is the first important step in fighting back.
Oh, yes. fighting back against the prosecutors and judges holding Genghis Khan accountable under the state law for inflating and deflating his property values depending on how much he would gain from that lie. A fight worth fighting for the guilty, but apparently not a fight worth paying for. And that's why it's fucking asinine that this New York appellate court granted a man who claims that he has $500 million just lying around somewhere the opportunity to pay less than a third of his bond so he could get his appeal filed. Because that right there sounds an awful lot like these appellate jesters just did the fraud father a favor. Which makes total sense when you consider the whole two-tiered justice system maggots like to go on and on about. For example, here's the billionaire on paper only explaining how money works to a reporter.
You mentioned the cash you had, you said on Friday, something like $500 million. You intended to put some of that into the campaign. Now that the bond's been reduced, are you going to start putting money into your campaign?
Yeah.
You haven't done that since 2016.
Well, first of all, it's none of your business, I mean, frankly. But I might do that. I have the option. But if I have to spend $500 million on a bond, I wouldn't have that option. I'd have to start selling things. I don't have to sell anything. I'll be spending money on my campaign. I might spend a lot of money on my campaign. But I should have that option. A crooked judge shouldn't say, we're going to have you post a bond and take all of that money that I could be spending on a campaign or other things if I want to do other things.
Well, sure, you can spend the money you grifted any way you want. But if you have a judgment of $464 million against you, it's probably a good idea that you pay that first. Because under the second tier of this two-tiered justice system, you'd be jailed. Your bank accounts, your assets seized and sold to pay for the judgment if you spent your money on whatever you want. But this moldy orange of a schlub, he didn't want to sell off his properties to get the cash because he might not get them back. And these New York appeals jesters said, well, that's not fair. Here's $250 million reduction on your bond amount so you can pay less and get an appeal. Because what the actual fuck? Meanwhile, the man who claims to have a net worth of $4.6 billion is out there in his untailored suit from the Big and Tall discount outlet, hawking anything he can get his tiny little hands on to make money. Because when you have $500 million in cash just lying around your retirement home in Florida, it makes sense to everyone that you would reinvent yourself as a Bible salesman.
Donald Trump is desperate for cash.
And with his legal bills piling up, Donald Trump is turning to religion of sorts for some help. In a social media post yesterday, the presumptive 2024 Republican nominee announced he is hawking his own version of the Bible.
The God Bless the USA Bible, named for country singer Lee Greenwood's classic tune, for just $59.99 plus tax and shipping. Now, you may be wondering, what makes this Bible so special? Well, as the website makes sure to note, in the frequently asked questions section, it is the only Bible officially endorsed by President Trump. And if you're wondering why a not particularly religious man would endorse a Bible, the New York Times explains, quote, he is getting royalties from purchases.
I'm proud to be partnering with my very good friend Lee Greenwood in connection with promoting the God Bless the USA Bible. This Bible is the King James Version and also includes our founding father documents. Yes, the Constitution. Christians are under siege. We must protect content that is pro-God. We must make America pray again. Get a copy of God Bless the USA Bible now and help spread our Christian values with others.
There is so much to laugh at this. First off, this Bible being the King James Version is very important for those thrifty grifters out there because this version is actually in the public domain. In other words, no residuals or licensing fees to pay turns fake billionaires into millionaires, or at least helps them pay their legal fees. Secondly, one-hit wonder from the 80s, Lee Greenwood, who has been selling this cheap-ass Bible out of his garage for many, many decades, happens to be a frequent guest at Dunce Cap Don's retirement home in Florida. And I don't know for a fact that Lee pulled Marlardo aside at the club for an impromptu pitch meeting about how much money they could make off of evangelical maggots if the former president sold Lee's Bibles with a few additions like the U.S. Constitution and some of the lyrics to his song. I just know it's true. After the laughable launches of Schittler's Ode to Erectionist stinks and that made in China air treason sneakers that he's been hawking, obviously it's all not enough money to keep old Yeller out of jail, but at least it's something. Oh, and let's not forget the RNC's campaign coffers are being bled dry by the tangerine douchebag's daughter-in-law and former campaign staffer, now turned RNC co-chairs. Case in point, folks, the most recent RNC fundraising dinner. You're gonna love this.
That big pot of money, it is nearly gone. Trump is looking for another cash cow. Next month, Trump is set to hold a big ticket fundraising dinner with the RNC in Palm Beach, Florida. The invitation shows that the first $6,600 donated goes straight to Trump's campaign. And the next $5,000 donated after that go to Trump's Save America PAC, the entity that has been paying his legal bills. So in order to actually get money to the RNC at this RNC fundraiser, you first have to clear $11,600 in Trump's own piggy banks.
Oh, but please tell me again how this lumbering lardass isn't using the RNC as a personal piggy bank when over $11,000 donated to the RNC goes straight to that broke-ass bitch. And I know the new RNC co-chairs and real-life wife to Eric, can't believe it, Miss Laura Trump, doesn't want people to see that the siphoning of tens of thousands of dollars from RNC donor going right off the top is something that they actually have to do.
The newly installed RNC co-chair, Laura Trump, the wife of his son, Eric, says the party has to stay focused on November, saying the party will not fund Mr. Trump's legal costs directly, and the donors can opt out of a fundraising system designed to send portions of each donation to an account that pays some Trump legal bills.
Anyone who does not want to contribute to that very small amount of money is able to opt out of that.
Okay, yeah, but come on. Seats for this desperate display for money start off at $250,000 per person. What's $11,000 per person of that money going to pay for legal fees for the tiny-handed grifter, you say? Well, if you ask any of the House Republicans, some senators, the myriad of down-ballot GOPers who need the RNC to fund their re-election campaigns this year, otherwise they lose their seats, they would say that they really need that cash.
Joining us now, Republican strategist and former communications director for the RNC, Doug High. In the financial disclosures, the Biden team, the DNC, is vastly outraising Donald Trump. Donald Trump's money is going to his legal fees.
I think the Republicans know that they have trouble right now, the RNC, getting that money into key critical states. If you're from Michigan, especially, Pete Hoekstra, former member of Congress, who's now the state party chair for the Republicans in Michigan, is saying, I don't have what I need. That's a problem for Republicans moving forward. And the lack of funding that's getting to states, that's a much more important story.
But not one you want to hear in an election year. The Republicans can't afford to run re-election campaigns because Scooby Coo is using all of their cash just to stay out of jail long enough that he thinks he might be able to get back into the White House so he can be a dictator. Just for one day. Because that's how math works. And elections. And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. Oh, and don't forget, Sundays at 6 p.m. Ohio time, you can re-listen to this very show on Crowtown Radio. But if that's not enough for you, you can catch me once a week on Facepalm America with host Beowulf Rocklin, where we make fun of the news in real time on a recorded podcast. You can follow This Week Again on social media wherever you can find us. And we are always available for your listening pleasure on places like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show. And to Dur for now.